You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa ko Caden Tokawingawa. No mai haere mai ki te wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpare Thursday. My name is Caden and I'm your host for today. I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined in the studio by producer Jasmine. Efa'a kene coming up on the show. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I spoke to Shannon Halbert about the government replacing regional councils with combined territories boards, Labour's members' bill to repeal the Regulatory Standards Act, and yesterday's OCR cut. I spoke to marine microplastics researcher at the University of Auckland, Dr. Samantha Laidwig, about the impact of car tyres on microplastic pollution in marine environments and what the potential solutions are. And I also spoke to University of Auckland Associate Professor Dr. Kim Meller about new research that shows gene therapy could reverse a type of heart failure that is associated with diabetes. Jasmine, what have you got for us today?
Today I spoke to Councillor Shane Henderson about the government shake-up of local council structures, summer bus routes and the suspicious fire at GAY last weekend. I also talked to musician and sound engineer Laura Thompson about the cancellation of One Love Festival and what it means for Aotearoa's current live music scene.
He aha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces, so get in touch. Tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395 or wire mai rane. Give us a call in studio on 3093879. Ka awa e wariwari iahi ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene korero ano. He pakehere rokiroki maronga i te pae tukutuku o Erarangi Poho, mi haere ki 95BFM, irakati.com. You can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com. Text in your thoughts on Rima Toru Iwa Rima 5395 or give us a call in studio on Toru Kore Iwa Toru Waru Fitu Iwa 3093879. Now let's get into the show.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with Labour MP Shannon Halbert.
The government has proposed to abolish regional councils, with city and district councils taking over these duties instead. Regional councils would be replaced by 11 Combined Territories Boards, or CTBs. The changes are now open for consultation, with legislation expected to be introduced mid-next year. Labour Party MP Duncan Webb has introduced a members' bill to repeal the Regulatory Standards Act. This follows New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters promising to campaign on repealing the legislation during next year's election. And the Reserve Bank has cut the official cash rate, bringing it to its lowest level in 3 years in an effort to support economic renewal. The bank's rate setting committee says economic recovery is patchy and slow, but inflation is expected to ease next year, allowing another reduction. For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I spoke to Shannon Halbert about all of these topics. I started by asking for his thoughts on the government scrapping regional councils.
Well, isn't it interesting? A government that campaigned in the last election on localism, giving locals more say, are now doing exactly the opposite.
Are you concerned about the impact this restructure could have on Te Tiriti obligations, particularly in relation to environmental management?
I'm certainly concerned about that when it comes to this government. I think the regional councils play an important role in environmental protection and natural hazard responses, waste management projects and public transport, of course. So I think we should be watching this carefully because this government doesn't have a good track record on these particular issues, protecting Te Tiriti or protecting the environment.
Lots of people do think the structure of local government is too convoluted. Do you see a need to streamline how the council operates?
Yeah, Labour certainly supports simplifying local government, but not at the cost of losing local voices from our communities. I think that's really important. If we go back to when the National Government, National Enact Government merged Auckland City, you know, there's a number of tweaks that had to happen 10 years on in order to restore some of their poor decisions back at that time. So I've got low trust when it comes to this government, when they want to amalgamate councils, but most of all, I'm concerned about the protections of our environment.
How can you balance protecting local voices and streamlining councils if not going for a plan like the National Party's?
Well, you've got to carefully listen to your communities and what they say. It doesn't need to be all at once. It can be incremental. It's important that National actually sits down and consults with communities and newly elected councillors. Local Government NZ are an important stakeholder. And, you know, rightfully they have concerns. So you've got to work with people, you've got to listen to them and take everyone with you. That's not the track record of Christopher Luxon and his government. They tend to take us backwards on most things.
And the Regulatory Standards Act is back in headlines. Why has Labor put forward a members' bill to repeal the Act?
Labor's been really clear right from the start that we would repeal the Regulatory Standards Bill within the first 100 days, particularly because of its erosion of Te Tiriti o Waitangi and environmental protections. It puts a number of things at risk. We thought it was important, or Duncan Webb thought it was important, to put a members' bill up. He's done that because if there is consensus across the House, let's get on with it and repeal it now. But it really shows, you know, the chaos of this government. They are putting forward bills like the Regulatory Standards Bill, and at the same time, you've got one partner that wants to walk it backwards. That is unstable, and that is not what New Zealanders want.
It also seems to be motivated by New Zealand First saying that they are open to repealing the Act. Did Labor give New Zealand First enough time to respond before putting this bill forward?
Well, New Zealand First is well known for putting up members' bills in order to capture public attention on key issues. They've done that with the toilets issue. And so, you know, it's not uncommon for parties to put up members' bill. We go through a process, though, in that we reach out to parties to invite them to support the bill. If we have New Zealand First bill, then that will bypass the ballot and we'll get on with it and repeal the Regulatory Standards Bill.
So in New Zealand First tradition, is this bill from Duncan Webb more an effort to grab media attention?
No, it's genuinely a reflection of where Labor views the Regulatory Standards Bill. We committed to repealing that in the first 100 days. Winston Peters and New Zealand First's position means that we could possibly do that earlier. And so as a result, Duncan Webb has put up a members' bill and we invite Winston Peters to support that and let's repeal it together.
Shifting gears again, is the OCR cut a good sign for the economy?
Oh, so there's some good things in it. I think it gives some people a little bit of savings. But it's really not the cost of living respite and response that New Zealanders were looking for or that they were promised after the last election by Christopher Luxon and the National-led government.
National is celebrating it as a huge win for their party and government. Should they be?
Well, it's a minor outcome that has benefits for a small group of New Zealanders, but it doesn't really address those that are working their guts out on minimum wage, those that are struggling to make ends meet, those that are struggling to put food on the table. So it's not a win for the National Government and they need to, you know, keep on going and follow through on the promise that they intended, which was cost of living relief.
There's also an international element to the position our economy is in. Governor Christian Hawkesby said bring back boring in terms of monetary policy in reference to these big changes from overseas, including tariffs and trade wars. How much of a difference do you think these have made for New Zealand's economy?
Well, the economy hasn't really moved. National and Christopher Luxon doesn't have a plan to shift our economy. And that's why we're in the current state that we are in. Their mismanagement of our economy means that New Zealanders, working people, are seeing no change as a result. They're seeing increases in the prices of food and rent and transport costs. The list goes on. So they've really broken a promise, and as a result, New Zealanders are going backwards.
That was Labour's Shannon Halbert on the government replacing regional councils with combined territories boards, Labour's Members Bill to repeal the Regulatory Standards Act, and yesterday's OCR cut.
That was our weekly chat with Labour MP Shannon Halbert.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Councilling on 95BFM, our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
This week, Aotearoa's Local Government Minister and Resource Management Act Reform Minister have announced a major shake-up of local government. Regional councils would be replaced with mayors convening to form 11 combined territory boards across the motu. Ongoing conversations about wider public transport circuits to West Auckland beaches are arising once more as Tamaki heads into summer months, and popular destinations like Piha remain largely publicly inaccessible. Last weekend, a fire that is being treated as suspicious broke out at GAY nightclub on Karangahape Road. The Detective Senior Sergeant Martin Friend confirmed the fire happened in a rubbish bin inside the club bathroom. The flames were quickly extinguished by emergency services early Sunday morning, and nobody was harmed. I spoke to Councillor Shane Henderson about these topics. Kia ora, Shane. What has been the atmosphere and reaction in Council to the proposed local government reform that Simon Watts and Chris Bishop announced on Tuesday?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? So the proposal, for listeners, just really briefly, is it's apparently the biggest shake-up of local government in 30 years. It would abolish regional councils that would apply sort of across the country and transfer their functions to mayors who would sit on kind of a combined territories board, and they'd sort of sit down and work out things like environmental management, things like that, water, you know. And so it's a really interesting kind of new change. For Aucklanders, we're in a unitary authority, so we already do, this is getting technical here, but we already do city council and regional council stuff, so it doesn't really kind of touch on us. But for the rest of the country, it's a pretty big shake-up on sort of how their rates and how their public infrastructure is managed. And in terms of the discussion here in Auckland, well, it's first and foremost interesting to see how it actually goes, because it is a big change. And yeah, dealing with, having a lot more power in the mayor's office for these small councils, that will be an interesting one as well.
What is your take on Bishop's statement that the status quo of local government is not, quote, fit for purpose? I know you say that Tamaki's council operates closer to the model than perhaps other smaller regions, but what is your take on that perspective of the overall system?
Yeah, I would agree with that, but I probably come from a different place there. I think that the local government system can work extremely well if we actually believe in it and we back it and we invest in it. So local councils in New Zealand have some of the lowest share of public revenue in the Western world. So in other words, for every $100 you pay in various taxes, probably about 7% of that goes to local government, which is a very small amount compared to other countries. We have the capability, skills, and the connection to the public to take on more and to do more and to really deliver for the communities that we serve. And so I would encourage the government, and you know, governments of any flavour, to actually back in local government, actually start to localise services rather than continually centralising them.
And looking to the upcoming sunny season in Tamaki, the ongoing issue of public transport to West Auckland beaches, how is progress going with securing things like a Piha summer bus trial?
Yeah, it's slow but steady. I think we've won kind of the public argument, and also I believe that Auckland Transport sees the need in terms of putting on a bus service to Piha, because I've been for years pushing, and so has the community, been pushing for a trial bus service to go out to Piha in the summer months. It is a regional asset. It's something that we emphasise internationally as a place to go, and yet you've got to get in your car and create pollution and all kinds of things all along the way in this beautiful natural environment. So it's got to change. And honestly, I think when the CRL goes live, we know a bit more about how the public transport service will connect, and we can look to things like a Piha bus trial from there. So it's going to take a bit longer than I think we need it to be, but I'll continue to push that, and so will the community.
And do you have any concerns over the fire that broke out at a GAY over the weekend on Karangahape Road?
Yeah, first and foremost, thank goodness everyone was fine. Yeah, it seemed like it was quickly extinguished and contained, but The first thing I would say is a message to people to be fire safe, because we've had some tragic events overseas in the last sort of few years around nightclubs and around concert venues and things like that. And so for the venue operators to sort of make sure that you are doing everything you can for fire safety, and also for people to look out for themselves as well. I'm just so glad that it's worked out okay. It would have been a very scary moment for a while there.
That was Councillor Shane Henderson on the government's proposed changes to Regional Council, a Piha summer bus trial, and the fire that broke out at GAY last weekend.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Councilling on 95BFM.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the B and text in your thoughts 5395.
Go Cooler Music is giving away a guitar. Want to win it? Just text Go Cooler to 5395, spelled G-O-K-U-L-A, along with your B-card number and your favourite guitar player or riff, and you'll be in the draw to win a Torquay Legacy guitar. Tune in to Dirtbag Radio Monday, December 1st, from 7 to 9 p.m. to hear Rapley draw the winner. Cheers, Go Cooler Music, 378 Broadway, Newmarket.
Jazz Cigarette, Bob Hope, Dubage, Jar Rastafari, Wacky Backy, Mez, Mary Jane, Marley, Sheba Cheba.
Whatever you call it,
Muggles.
Marijuana Media has you covered. Every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, join Chris Fowley from Normal for the good word on law reform, cannabis in the media, and the latest in green science. Marijuana Media, 4:20 every Thursday on 95BFM Drive, thanks to The Hemp Store. Visit them at 253 K Road or shop online at hempstore.co.nz.
Ah! Guys! He finally asked me out! He says he knows a spot.
It better not be ice cream at Mission Bay.
I hope it's not under the Harbour Bridge.
Oh no! What if you have to walk up Mount Eden?
He better not think Minnehaha is original.
Oh, thank God. It's a beer spot. I can try the new local brews.
The 95BFM Drive Show. A 3-hour psychedelic playground of japes, jive and jams. 4 to 7 p.m. every weekday only on 95BFM.
Thanks to the beer spot, your tappy place.
It's music.
95BFM.
Broadcast to the world and podcast to your device. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
Lonely again in the hopes of
I'm not sure of our position on that particular bill, so I can't comment on that right now.
It's a kind of bird. This is the bird they're endorsing for Bird of the Year.
The Wire.
New research shows car tyres are contributing to the world's single largest source of microplastic pollution. Microplastics are prevalent in New Zealand, with one study estimating that about 74 tonnes, the equivalent of 3 million plastic water bottles, fall over Auckland each year. I spoke to University of Auckland marine microplastics researcher Dr. Samantha Laidwig about the impact of tyres in causing microplastic pollution in marine environments. I started by asking if she could explain what microplastics are and why they are such a big issue.
So microplastics are tiny pieces of plastic that you can sometimes see by your eye. They start by 5 millimeters in size, but they go down even to sizes that you would need a microscope to see. And they're generated from all sorts of plastics. So think about your single-use plastics, the water bottles or cutlery or plates, all the way through to bags, chip bags of sorts, and other plastics that we use in our lives. One that people don't typically think of are the synthetic rubber bits that come off of our tires.
On that topic, can you talk about how much of an impact tires have and how tires compare to these other microplastic polluters?
Yes, absolutely. Tires are actually one of the dominant sources of microplastics to the environment. And our coastal samples in Auckland were showing that about 81% of the plastic that we looked at was rubber. And of that rubber, 66% of it was synthetic rubber. And so this just goes to show that it is a dominant plastic and it is happening in New Zealand as well as globally. And the worry about these particles is that they're actually a very complex chemical pollutant. So it's not just the synthetic nature of them, whereby many natural processes that break down things in this world, like plants and other natural things on Earth, synthetic nature particles would not be broken down as easily. So these synthetic rubber particles won't be broken down as easily. And also, so that means they're going to be hanging around for a long time. And the chemicals that are attached to these particles can be quite toxic to organisms. And one, for example, is a chemical that can wipe out entire salmon species in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. So that's become a hot topic as of recent.
You mentioned this briefly, but is this a problem that's especially prevalent in some places like Aotearoa, or is it a real international problem?
It's definitely a real international problem, not just Aotearoa, but I think if you look at who is the dominant car countries around the world, private cars, I guess, Aotearoa is definitely up there. And we're ranking high with some countries around the world, like the United States. People love their cars, and, you know, that's just a luxury that we've grown to be comfortable with, really. And there are definitely some ways to combat the issue by just ride sharing or using public transport, for example.
Now that we know this is a problem, can you talk a bit more about what the potential solutions are?
Getting back to that, it's a good idea to be ride sharing. So jumping in the car with a mate can definitely reduce the amount of tire particles that you would be shedding over time. And getting into public transport, so utilizing buses. For New Zealand specifically, about half of the tire wear pollution that goes into the environment is from private cars, and a very slim, small amount is from buses. So if we can just shift that from cars to buses, we would reduce our tire wear emissions by far. And another solution that we're looking at in our research is testing some stormwater treatment devices that can capture these fine materials. So we currently have a lot of stormwater treatment devices out there that can capture the big things that are bigger than 5 millimeters. But for all the small bits, including the microplastics and these tire wear particles, those are rarely filtered out. And the only one that we have, only device that we have so far that can do this is a rainwater or a rain garden, where the water from the road would just filter over through some soil and vegetation area before it went out into the coastline. And so we're looking at testing this coming this next year to see if that's working for us. And if we can, if it is, then we can start to install some more rain gardens around to help with this issue.
Since this is an international issue, does there need to be any kind of international cooperation for a solution? And of course, this could mean between governments, but also between universities maybe, or research centres?
Yes, absolutely. So I think you're right. It does span several sectors, getting into government and policy, but also what we can do in the research world and in community world as well. And internationally, what we're looking at is someday in the future, there will be this International Plastic Pollution Agreement. And this incorporates microplastics and tire wear particles. And it gives the opportunity for countries to come to the table and talk about what they can do and what partnerships they can build to reduce the amount of microplastics going into the environment. So I think we'll see that coming in the next couple of years, which would be really great. And besides that, countries are already moving to reduce the amount of tire wear particles going into the environment. So they're putting wear rate restrictions on tires. So just seeing that we can get more tires on the roads that are wearing less, and less of the tires on the roads that are wearing more. So effectively, overall, that should reduce the amount of tire particles going into the environment. And another move that some areas are looking at, specifically the Pacific Northwest and the United States, they're looking at, or I think already have, banned some of these toxic chemicals that come from tires from being used in manufacturers. And so these are some interesting opportunities that Aotearoa can look at to think about what would work best for them and their approach in addressing this issue.
Is there anything else you want people to know about your research that hasn't already been covered today?
Oh, that's a good question. And I really like with our research that we get to provide an area of hope for such a complex and sometimes really daunting pollutant. And it's just to say that these the concentrations of tires change throughout the space and the environment. So they're not always there. They're present in more places than others, and just as well the timing of it. So they're not always having an impact. Some of the impacts is early on from the release of these chemicals from the tire pollutant, and some of the impacts are later on when the particles get built up in organisms' body system and then have an impact on them. So it's not always impacting, and we're starting to understand now, this is a new research project that we've only been doing for 2 years now, but we'll continue to do going into the future. And we're just learning that, impacts vary. And so sometimes it's impacting and sometimes it's not. And our environment is quite resilient. So I always like to leave people with a little bit of hope to go forward.
That was marine microplastics researcher at the University of Auckland, Dr. Samantha Laidwig, on the impact of car tyres on microplastic pollution in marine environments and what the potential solutions are.
Why do you think less students are choosing to study at university?
Well, because being a student isn't sexy anymore.
The Wire.
Bay of Plenty Reggae Festival One Love have announced their 2026 cancellation earlier this week, citing the ongoing cost of living crisis and unforeseen behind-the-scenes developments as the reason why. Speculation around the cancellation continues to tie the festival's legacy to its previous promoter and founder, Pato Alvarez, following his sex offending conviction in 2023. I spoke to musician and sound engineer Laura Thompson about what the cancellation of the festival indicates for Aotearoa's live music scene and the accessibility of venues and touring circuits for musicians in Aotearoa. Kia ora, Laura. The current economic climate was cited as the reason for One Love's cancellation primarily. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's certainly a tough economic climate and a tough time to be working in events and the music industry. I also wonder about One Love Festival's previous owner, who was charged with a number of crimes last year. Upon my research, I found that he did sell the festival in 2022, but I wonder about the PR of that happening last year and whether that has left an imprint at all as well. I've never worked for or played at or been to that festival personally, though, so I cannot comment other than anecdotally. But it's certainly a hard time for festivals and the music industry in general at the moment.
And what do you think this signals overall with consideration for the tough economic climate and those past associations, as you mentioned, but also just in general for live music in New Zealand? What do you think it signals for our artists in the wider community?
Yes. So for the past 4 years, I've been running sound at a small local venue in Kirikiriroa called Last Place. One thing I've seen is that it's getting harder and harder for the small artists to make money than it ever was before because the overheads are so high. I play in a small band myself, which is called Empress, and if we were to put on a show, we would not expect to make any money. That's kind of standard at the moment. It's become also quite common to pay high prices for venue hire in NZ, and this often shuts out a lot of up-and-coming acts who would tour NZ independently from, for example, Australia or close locations. I don't think my band could afford to hire many of the venues that I work at as a sound engineer, but venue owners are also on tough times too, and they're struggling to make a living. For the wider community, I guess that means less shows or smaller low overhead shows at DIY venues or underground venues, which is quite cool, I think, for the community. My students recently put on a show at Silo Park in Auckland, so there'll be more things like this happening, hopefully, as a result of the current climate, which is a positive, and as venues become less accessible to the small artists. For the bigger artists and festivals, this means the bookers are sadly less likely to take risks as well. When it comes to bigger festivals that I'm involved with, some of them are often critiqued in the media for lineups for putting on the same bands year after year, and it's simply because in the climate they can't afford to take risks as well. I think this is an important consideration, that the financial aspect, meaning they are under pressure to sell a lot of tickets, is an important part of that, which is unfortunate and also shuts smaller artists out from being able to play those festivals, We're also seeing more venues and tours run by international companies like Live Nation. Some of their practices and procedures from overseas don't fit the NZ demographic too well. Some iconic venues have ended up selling to Live Nation, such as San Fran. But I'm not too sure what the future of that looks like for independent venue owners as well.
As you mentioned, promoters are less likely to take risks in that situation when it comes to those bigger festivals. The move with cancelling One Love was also commented to be an alternative to offering a watered-down version of the experience versus operating at their usual full capacity. What are your comments on that take as an all-or-nothing approach?
Yeah, sure. So I've worked as an audio engineer since 2004 and I've worked across multiple countries. What NZ has always kind of unfortunately received watered-down versions of some of the larger artist stage shows, and that's for like quite a few reasons. For example, I've just returned from an international tour with some bands from the USA. I don't think these issues are exclusive to New Zealand, but there are a number of unique factors and costs that bands like that have with bringing their full touring show to NZ, including the practicality of shipping and transporting larger stage props and equipment. Sometimes the expense is too great, so bands choose to bring a downscaled version in terms of like the stage equipment and show that they bring. And sometimes that's the band's choice, sometimes it's festivals or promoter. The other consideration is the venue sizes and stage sizes in NZ. There's a lot of talk, obviously, about things like Taylor Swift and Pink in the news with Eden Park, but for mid-size artists who might be touring like a smaller stage show, they end up squeezing their production, which is designed for, say, power station size or the size of a One Love or that festival, into tiny stages, such as San Fran or Tuning Fork, because of the lack of appropriate venues. So I think there's a lot of complex arguments with regards to that, and unfortunately I do see their point in terms of not wanting to offer a watered-down show. I know that's reasons why a lot of bands, we're at the end of the world, so you know, some of them choose not to come here just due to that fact. One thing on this recent tour, I was touring with Trey Sprints and Mr. Bungle. He said that Mr. Bungle would love to tour the South Island. Many bands don't do this because of the added expense as well. So a lot of them only go to Auckland. And I know that One Love is held in the Bay of Plenty. Perhaps that is part of the concern as well, as the audience numbers to sustain and sell enough tickets. I'm not sure.
What do you hope to see to provide more certainty around the live music scene in Aotearoa?
Well, I'm super positive about the youth at the moment and I'm currently involved in a number of different roles at a community level working with youth. I particularly want to shout out to my role at Girls Rock Aotearoa. I'm a regional director for To The Front, and I've noticed that there is a lack of available and functional all-ages venues and rehearsal spaces for the under-18 age group. So going to a show, putting on a show, playing a show when you're under-18 is something that a lot of us older people probably remember doing, but it's less accessible now for a number of reasons. So what I hope to see is more venues or more spaces similar to The Stomach in Palmerston North, which is both a rehearsal space and small venue, which is council funded. I think these smaller local communities, such as Bay of Plenty and Kirikiriroa and others, may be able to lobby for something similar and hopefully sustain it for like the up-and-coming community. I think that's pretty... In Auckland, there are a few venues, but also there's less than there used to be, so I think that's pretty urgent that council and organisations get on to sort of funding and supporting some of these spaces. We've been involved in the establishment of Mesoverse, which is an all-ages venue here, and I'm always trying to advocate for council-funded art spaces because realistically it all starts with youth, and they're the one age group that we need to support. If youth stop putting on gigs and playing gigs, you know, eventually the music scene dies, so we need to kind of get in there and nurture that. And I think there's a lot of people doing that and a lot of organisations doing that, so yeah, I'm hoping that that provides some certainty in the coming years for the up-and-coming community.
Musician and sound engineer Laura Thompson on One Love's cancellation and what it says about Aotearoa's current live music scene.
around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after a short break. You're listening to 95BFM, keep it on the B, and texting your thoughts 5395.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
New research shows the potential of a genetic therapy to rescue heart function in a type of heart failure that people with diabetes are more likely to experience. Diabetes affects about 300,000 people in Aotearoa, with heart failure recognized as the most common cardiovascular complication. The type of heart failure that diabetes increases the risk of is currently difficult to treat, but the latest research offers new hope. I spoke to University of Auckland Associate Professor Dr. Kim Meller about her work on this research and what the next steps are for it to turn into a viable treatment. I started by asking if she could explain the size of the problem of diabetes and its complications in Aotearoa.
Sure. Well, diabetes is a really big issue in New Zealand, and there's more than 300,000 people living with diabetes, and it is increasing far beyond what all the predictions had thought. So it's an increasing issue, but what we have been looking at is how diabetes relates to heart disease, because the evidence shows that up to 3/4 of diabetics have some signs of heart issues, and this can predispose to heart failure. So the link between heart failure and diabetes is really strong, and that's been our sort of research focus, is trying to understand why that is and how can we design better ways to treat that particular type of heart disease.
Can you talk a bit more about what the focus of your research was and what you have found?
Certainly. What we have been looking at is the, really at a discovery molecular level, so right down in the detail of what's happening inside the heart muscle cells when diabetes is present, we have been looking at how the heart can process sugar, and in particular glucose sugar, and it stores it away in these big stores called glycogen inside the heart muscle cells. And we've shown that this can actually be really problematic. And if we use a gene therapy to target this pathway and to reverse the damage that diabetes has done, then we can improve heart function. And at this stage, it's very early discovery work, but what we hope is that it might actually lead to a new therapy that's actually targeted at the problem at that really molecular level. So if you target the mechanism, you have more chance of actually fixing the problem and really improving the quality of life for these patients.
Since these are very early stage, or you're at a very early stage in these findings, what are the next steps and how long until it could become a viable treatment option?
The next step is really to partner with, industry or pharmaceutical companies to develop it more towards a clinical treatment. The work that we're doing is really the proof of concept. So we have to show that it will work and that and provide enough evidence to support that next move into translating it into a clinical therapy. So what we're aiming to do is to partner with these larger companies that can move it forward into a clinical trial.
And how does this fit into a wider context of diabetes and heart-related complications research, both in Aotearoa and internationally? Or is this quite novelty research?
Yes. Well, the thing with heart failure treatments is that over the last many decades, we've become better at treating the problems in the heart related to how it contracts, how it pumps. And that's been good. And that type of heart failure where the problem is related to contraction, there's been some improvement in that type of heart failure. But for people with diabetes, they're more likely to have a different type of heart failure, which is really hard to treat. It doesn't respond to those same conventional treatments that we've been using for decades.
And the problem with the heart is more about how well it opens up and fills with blood before it contracts and moves the blood around the body. So what we're trying to do, and this is a global effort, not just ourselves, but our researchers in this field is really trying to understand what goes wrong and design new treatments for it, because there's a increasing population of people with this type of heart failure, and it's very resistant to the current medication.
And I want to finish by asking, how much of a difference do you think this research and research field could make?
Well, I mean, sky's the limit, I guess. Because the population of people living with diabetes and suffering from heart complications, is that population is so large, and it is increasing, and especially here in Aotearoa. So, I mean, if this does really translate into a therapy that can improve not just quality of life, but also prolong lifespan for people with this type of this heart condition, you know, that could have huge impact for whānau, for the patients themselves, and communities in our country.
That was University of Auckland Associate Professor Dr. Kim Mallor on new research that shows gene therapy could reverse a type of heart failure that is associated with diabetes.
So around, you know, up to 8 or 10,000.
Shit. The Wire. That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, nā te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on The Wire for Rā Pare Thursday. Nei rā, hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you to everyone who spoke with us today. Labour's Shannon Halbert, Auckland Council's Shane Henderson, University of Auckland's Dr. Samantha Laidwig, musician and sound engineer Laura Thompson, and University of Auckland's Dr. Kim Mallor. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is the 1 to 4 with Sophia.
Sit down, watch out, look out as it all falls to pieces. Head down, burnt out, stuck in a town I want out of. Eyes hurt, preaching, men in the suits make their pieces. Seems like I can't do anything but watch. Accelerate.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.